We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Junkyard Dogcast. I'm Jordan Hill. We got Kip Adams with us, as always, and then a special guest. Duck Territory's Eric Scopel has jumped on with us. We are going to be talking about Georgia and Oregon, the game to get things kicked off to start the 2022 season for the Bulldogs as well as the Ducks. We'll get started with you, Eric. How is this day treating you as you get ready for what I assume is going to be a trip out east in a few days?
Yeah, I fly out Friday. It's been busy. I just got back from practice. Well, I guess we watch as much as they allow, which is not a lot. You're probably used to that. And spoke with Coach Lanning for about 7 to 8 minutes. His second and final time speaking with media before Saturday's big game. So I've got as much as I possibly can from Lanning this week. So fire away with what you want to know. I think I've got a decent grasp, but I think as we've talked about before, this our grasp on it's not a lot necessarily, because I think both head coaches are pretty guarded with what they want to talk about.
Oh, yeah. I have no doubt Dan Lanning has brought the Georgia way out west. Before we get going, Kip, how is this day treating you as we get a little bit closer to the start of Georgia season?
Pretty good. I'm starting to, you know, I'm still in off-season shape, but, you know, trying to get prepared as best I can. I think we could use a little bit of an extended fall camp for conditioning purposes. But you know what? Saturday's right around the corner. I'm just going to go out there and see what I can do with what I got right now. But, yeah, it seems like, you know, it's here. And, you know, just excited because there's a lot of expectations, obviously, for both programs playing in this game. But these are the games you love to cover, and I think Dan Lanning knows that Kirby Smart loves these, you know, neutral site kickoff games. It's good for both programs, and it kind of, you know, it allows you not just to motivate your players in the offseason, but it gives you the best scouting report possible for what you have on your roster. So I just think it's good for these games versus, you know, kind of those not going to say cupcake games, but you know, you don't want to open up with an FCS opponent and then have no idea what you have, then go into conference play and just get bully balled and find out the hard way that you might not have the roster you think you do.
Well, Eric, let's jump right into it and kind of start from the top. The sort of the thread that is shared between Georgia and Oregon is Dan Lanning. Obviously, Dan was hired after Georgia's national championship run, the former defensive coordinator taking over there with the Ducks. Just in the time you have been around Dan and just been around the program since he took over, what stands out to you just about the way he has gone about running this program as they get ready for his first season?
Yeah, I think the culture seems to be set a lot, really similar to when Mario Cristobal first arrived here. Was, I guess, Cristobal a year as an offensive coordinator before being promoted. But there's a semblance and a sense that, like, the guys kind of get what the plan is, you know, and it was interesting because I think last year, some of that started to dissipate down the stretch of last year's season for Oregon. And you kind of started getting some mixed signals from the players, you know, overtly or not, of like, kind of felt like they lost kind of their focus and their direction. And I think Dan has brought a very clear, cohesive message, a very clear understanding of what the expectation is about, you know, the growth mindset. I'm sure these are probably phrases that carry over from Georgia and other parts of the Southeast where he's worked. But I just think, you know, it feels like from a culture perspective, there's been buy-in. And I think that's the most important thing. I mean, I've covered several, you know, iterations of Oregon teams coached by different coaches. And I think both Cristobal and now Dan have done a great job of establishing culture early on. I don't know if that was necessarily the case when Willie Taggart was here. That was kind of a weird year, to be honest, kind of weird that even took place. But that culture part seems to be really clearly in place. And I think talking with the coaches around him, I think he's hired a really good staff. A lot of kind of heavy hitters from a recruiting perspective. They continue to recruit really well. Guys who've got experience coaching at really high levels. And Tosh Lupoi has been a defensive coordinator at Alabama on national championship teams. And Kenny Dillingham has worked down in the Southeast a little bit. And he's super young. Guy's like 32 years old, and he's got a ton of years under his, you know, a ton of experience for someone his age. Obviously, this is he's a little green compared to some, but you know, I think just from a staff to up top to bottom, it's a great staff, and he inherits a pretty talented team. This is arguably, I don't know exactly where it'll stand in the team talent composite because I don't think that's come out yet. But last year's team was ninth nationally. I expect this year's team to be somewhere from probably 10 to 13. There's a little turnover with some key guys, but they also added some really talented players. So there's a lot of optimism. There's a lot of reason to be optimistic. There's also, I think, clear recognition going into this week that it's going to be a really tall task. And that's been communicated pretty clearly from Dan and all the way to the bottom of players who've spoken with this week. So I'm impressed, but of course I'm saying all this and I've seen one spring game. I've seen very little practice and I've seen no games during the fall. So my tune may change sooner than later if things go really ugly, but I don't expect it to be honest. I think there's a lot of optimism and I don't think I'm alone with those in Eugene or on the West Coast that are following this Oregon program that feel like there's a real sense of optimism right now.
Looking at this week specifically, I know, you know, with Kirby, the media availabilities he's had, he's taken several questions about Dan, obviously, because of their relationship. What has Dan said as far as, you know, when it comes to the time he spent at Georgia, whether it's dealing with Kirby Smart or just, you know, what this opportunity to play Georgia so quickly after he left Georgia, what has Dan sort of shared on that front as far as specifically playing Georgia?
I think one of the first things that stood out was just the amount of respect he has for the program, and that's obvious, and the amount of respect he has for Coach Smart. I think he noted that he wouldn't be in this seat if not for Coach Kirby Smart, and he's not wrong, right? I mean, if it would not for that opportunity, which you guys can probably inform me whether or not the Zach group was probably a little bit of a flyer on a really young, kind of inexperienced defensive coordinator when they promoted him, and I know they had some other really talented candidates. Glenn Schumann, who stepped into a co-DC role, was another candidate at the time, also another young, unexperienced guy at the time, probably. But I think Lanning is always kind of forever grateful for that opportunity. And so that part came across. And then the other part is he said he was really excited for this, you know, noted that he's not going to be playing. Coach Smart's not going to be playing. You know, all these coaches that he's you know, familiar with aren't going to be playing in the game, but certainly got the sense that, you know, he understands the magnitude of this. It's super weird, by the way. I mean, I know we haven't quite said it, but I think it's like kind of the elephant in the room of like, how weird is it that this is his first game, who they're facing under these circumstances? It's just bizarre. I mean, when the scheduler scheduled this out, whatever it was 6 years ago, nobody thought Oregon's head coach would be a coach coming over from Georgia who just won a national championship. I mean, the parallels are weird. I mean, the other part is Brian McClendon was Oregon's interim head coach for the Alamo Bowl. And now he's on Kirby Smart over at Georgia. So there's a bunch of kind of weird, I don't know, I mean, I don't want to say incestuous, but kind of overlap between these programs that makes it kind of a weird dynamic going into it. So Oregon doesn't have many players on its team they've recruited from the state of Georgia, but they've got a couple, and we've talked to those players. And obviously, for the most part, those aren't players Oregon beat for, you know, over Georgia for the recruitment. Those are guys that Georgia kind of overlooked. And then that maybe adds a chip on their shoulder that you would expect. But no, I think there's a great sense of respect and admiration, but also, as we've talked about, so much gamemanship kind of going on behind the scenes that I think Dan's trying to do everything he can to put Oregon in its best spot here to be really competitive this weekend.
It's so funny and it's so strange with the setup of this game, with Dan, obviously, very first game in Oregon going to be playing Georgia. And, you know, I was looking through trying to, like, research. Has this ever happened? It happened 2 years ago. Sam Pittman left Georgia, took over at Arkansas, and it was his first game. And I had a chance to ask Sam about that today on the coaches teleconference. He made a very good point. He said, look, Dan had an advantage of when he took the Oregon job, he knew they were playing Georgia. Arkansas was not on Georgia's schedule in 2020. Mm. The COVID season happens, and all of a sudden, Sam Pittman, former offensive line coach, is looking at his schedule going, oh, God, I got to play Georgia. in that very first game. So it's just kind of funny to see how that worked out. Kip, what do you make of this setup to this game as far as that goes? That storyline of Dan Lanning coming back to Georgia, obviously going to be playing the game in Atlanta. You know, the ties that he had and the amount of success he had while he was at Georgia, seeing this play out with kind of a reunion of sorts when we get to Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Lanning came to Georgia with a lot of similar attributes to Kirby Smart. It's interesting because I feel like their relationship has been talked about more than it seems from the media and the pundits more than the actual game that's going to be played. It's been described as you know, maybe the biggest aspect of the game or definitely the key storyline. You know, I'm interested in just seeing if there is any chess match between the two. They're both obviously bright defensive minds, but at the end of the day, I think that the familiarity aspect of this game is the most overrated aspect of it, because at the end of the day, once that first kickoff goes, it's going to be about who has the better roster and who has the better team. Now, there might be some decisions made that, you know, could swing the balance of the game that, you know, Dan Lanning will be tasked with making in his first game, or, you know, Kirby Smart will have to react to maybe some wrinkles that he didn't expect from Dan Lanning. But other than that, these two coaches, I mean, they know what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball. They both have, you know, bright offensive coaching staffs as well. But it's just going to come down to these rosters. And you know, the depth at certain positions is probably going to be a key factor in the second half. So for me, I'm not really, you know, I haven't really taken too much about it other than it's interesting. I just think that this is a game that this is going to probably come down to the line of scrimmage. Who has the better line? And that's kind of where my focus has been as I started to actually look at the game this week. Okay, we get it. Dan Lanning used to be on Georgia's staff. It is very intriguing that they're starting off the season playing each other. But, I mean, we're talking about a top 15 matchup. And so it's probably, you know, better time spent talking about these rosters, talking about these players, talking about the battles. You know, how is Georgia's defensive line that sent three players to the first round NFL draft going to handle maybe the best offensive line they're going to face all season? That's something that's kind of just taken my focus as I've looked past the coaching relationships and known that, you know, familiarity we've seen over the years hasn't really mattered as much. And obviously with Kirby Smart coming under the, you know, the Nick Saban tree, we've watched, you know, Saban just run through assistants left and right until last season, you know, losing two games to former assistants for the first time. So that storyline, we've watched it not matter at all. But obviously with Nick Saban, it's a little different because he's got the best roster in college football on an annual basis. So it's a little different. These rosters a little bit more evenly matched possibly, but at the same time, I think that's where this game is going to come down to. And, you know, Dan Lanning's got a shot. I think the number three versus number 11 games are kind of close to 50% in that, like, I think 55 to 60% range as far as the higher ranked team winning. I mean, that's not as high as what people would imagine just with Georgia coming off a national championship. So I just think, you know, how even will this game be and how even are these rosters? That's what I want to know, want to find out on Saturday.
Before we go to a break, Eric, Kip mentioned the offensive line for Oregon. And to me, from the outside looking in, that seems like, you know, a very strong point in this offense. And you know, looking at the fact that they were Joe Moore Award semifinalists, just like Georgia was last year, what do you make of this offensive line coming into a new year, the experience they have back, and the challenge Georgia is going to see in facing them?
Yeah, for starters, Mario started five guys but rotated three every game. I'd never seen anything like it, but every other offensive series, they moved their left guard to their left tackle. They moved their right guard to right tackle. They brought in another player to play one position. So what that benefited was is there's a lot of guys who played a ton. They had a guy who was, I guess, a sixth starter last year who graduated, but five of the guys who played the most snaps are all back. Now the question is where they all play, and they don't have a depth chart out. I don't know exactly how this all fits together. The most talented offensive lineman is TJ Bass. He finished last year as a left tackle. He wants to play left guard. That's what he'll play in the NFL. I think he's a guy who will be probably a day two draft selection, really talented as an interior guy, but Last year, they slid him out to left tackle, and he was by far their best player there. I don't think there's any question. But the hope was this year that they would find another way to kind of solve that problem. Steven Jones probably has a better left tackle body in terms of he's 6'7", long arms, doesn't have quite as quick a feet as you'd like. He was playing right tackle or right guard last year, depending upon the rotation. I don't know if they felt like he was doing enough in the spring, because in the spring he was their left tackle. Seemed like the last couple times we've watched some practice, and again, no depth chart out, seemed like TJ Bass was back at left tackle, but I'm going to be curious to see kind of how that operation works, because Oregon's going to be very aware of who's coming off that edge, and they want to have their best foot forward at left tackle. The other option might be true freshman Josh Connerly, who was the nation's top-rated offensive tackle this last cycle, who was getting some run with the ones early in camp, but from what I've seen and heard behind the scenes, I don't think you should expect to see him start. Maybe he gets in there if things don't go very well or there's an injury, but I think it's going to be one of those veteran guys at left tackle, and that's where it gets interesting. Ryan Walk is a great story in terms of he's really undersized, local kid from Eugene, Oregon, same high school as Justin Herbert, played with him, came as a walk-on. He's earned himself a starting spot. This is his third straight year as a starter. Very undersized. I will be curious to see how he holds up from some of the interior pressure from Georgia, because he's listed at like 6'2", 295, but 6'2 is a stretch. I'm not a super tall guy, but I'm an inch or two taller than he is. I'll be kind of curious to see how he handles himself. He equipped himself very well last year against Ohio State. Was kind of one of the breakout stars with how he performed a couple of times, pulling and just taking out guys at the second level. I'll be curious to see how he performs. But this is a veteran group that has, I would say, you know, a couple of years ago, they had Penei Sewell, who was a first round top 10 draft pick, and everybody knew it. This team has TJ Bass. So like I said, maybe he's a second, third, fourth round pick, but there's no super, super duper star here. There are five guys who played a lot together and five guys that are pretty good. I just don't necessarily know how it all fits together. And I think that's going to be the interesting part of the puzzle is who's playing left tackle, who's playing left guard. We know who the center is. That'll be Alex Forsythe. He's kind of the captain of the group. But collectively, it's a really talented group. But I think there's still some question marks, at least for me, going in of where everybody's situated. Because even last year, there was so much movement. And in the spring, they're moving guys. And it seems like in the fall, they continue to do that.
To your point with the background Mario had at offensive line, it's no surprise that they've still got a whole lot of talent at the positions. And going to be curious. I'll probably be scribbling notes, maybe help you out on Saturday once I get that starting line out there and make sure we got who all's out there. Eric, we'll take a quick break on here, and then we'll pop back on. We'll talk a little bit about Bo Nix, a guy a lot of Georgia fans have gotten a chance to watch over the years, and then just talk about a few of the other matchups and then eventually give our predictions on what we expect to see on Saturday.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With Fuel Cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Well, Eric, yeah, let's jump right into Bo Nix, a guy that has played Georgia three different times. This is going back to when he was a quarterback at Auburn. As we mentioned earlier, he has not officially been named the starter at Oregon. As far as I can tell, he's going to be the guy. Is that the case? And if so, Eric, what do you expect to see from Bo Nix as Oregon's quarterback?
It would be a real stunner if it's not Bo Nix at this point. I have heard that the competition was more competitive than maybe some on the outside expected, and that was a good thing because Ty Thompson, who really was kind of up and down this spring, supposedly had a really good offseason. I know he was down at the Manning Passing Academy, turned some eyes down there. Really big, talented athlete. This is a guy who was, before Dante more recently committed, was the highest-rated quarterback commit in program history, or at least since they started doing all the recruiting stuff at the beginning of the 2000s. But it sounds like Ty pushed Bo, and that's a good thing. It doesn't sound like, from what I've heard, he did enough to win the job, but we'll see. We could be shocked. I mean, they, again, no depth chart, and they're playing things very much close to the chest. In terms of what we've seen from Nix, is I was really impressed in the spring with how he handled himself with the other quarterbacks, because this is a competition, and you just don't know. You know, I think, you know, because of how limited what we were able to watch in practice was, it stood out to me that Nix would come over and give pointers to Ty Thompson and to Jay Butterfield, who are the other quarterbacks competing for the job, and would spend extra time after practice with his receivers and his tight ends, and really seemed like he put everything into trying to be a leader here, which is not always easy to do coming all the way across the country with a team that's pretty established, that that culturally probably a little different, being somebody from the state of Alabama as opposed to most of the guys in this roster are from Oregon or California or Washington, Nevada, Utah, that part of the country. It seems like he kind of won most of the team over, though. And I think he won over Ty Thompson and Jay Butterfield, too. Two scholarship guys he's competing with who've just had nothing but great things to say about him. How he fits into this offense is, I'm going to be, just like I talked about the offensive line, there's going to be some surprises for me. Same thing with Bo. I don't know what to expect. You know, I watched the highlights, and then I go watch the games, and there's a lot more lowlights that you don't see on the highlight reel. I mean, some of the highlight stuff is pretty dang special. And then you go up and look, well, they did lose by 17 points, and he threw two picks that weren't on that highlight reel. And you go back and watch it, and you go, oh, well, that's maybe not your favorite part. And you even saw that in the spring game where he had a couple really long touchdown passes, a couple really nice looks, but also threw one and just kind of didn't see a linebacker for a pick. And I think that's kind of what Oregon fans are expecting, which is some pretty high-end play, maybe some not so great play. I think there's a level of just excitement to see an offense that does try to stretch the field and does try to be a little more aggressive. I think when Cristobal was here, the sense from Oregon fans was it was kind of a boring offense. And, you know, we'll see what Kenny Dillingham intends to do. One of the things he's talked about is trying to stretch the ball vertically down the field, try to get the ball to Oregon's playmakers. This is a receiving core that lost a ton of guys, but the players that are back are super talented. I think 4 of the 12 best receiver recruits in program history are on this roster. They've had a couple transfers that have come in that I think will play a pretty big role. They have, one of their best receivers was playing running back last year, and they moved him over to slot. Seven McGee, that's a guy that's been compared to DeAnthony Thomas. So we'll kind of see what the skill room looks like, but I'll just be curious to see kind of how the offense operates, because we saw a little bit of it in the spring game. They threw the ball all the way around the yard. They did a good job with it. But I wonder what it looks like when you get into a game like this against an opponent like this. And my guess is they're going to be forced to do a little bit more of that than they'd like, just because of the talent Georgia has in its front seven. And then we get to see what Bo Nix can do and to see if he can have a little bit of redemption. It's funny because I was thinking about this morning. Last time Oregon played an SEC team to open up a season, Bo Nix was on the other sideline and threw a touchdown pass to dash Oregon's dreams. You know, there's some level of storybook kind of ending here for if maybe he can do the opposite and help Oregon win a game against a really big time football program on the road, but we'll see if it gets there.
It's gonna be very interesting to see, and also kind of just an adjustment to see Bo Nix for the people who have watched him not in an Auburn jersey. That's obviously going to be something very different. I wanted to make sure too, Eric, and ask you about a guy that, as far as Oregon players go, is one of the guys that have been talked about the most as far as with Georgia and getting ready for this game, and that's Noah Sewell. What does he do for this defense? And maybe more importantly, what do you feel like Tosh Lupoi and Dan Lanning can get out of Noah and the role he can play this year?
Yeah, Noah's super talented as a linebacker. He and Justin Flo, who's now finally healthy. I mean, those two guys were recruited in the same cycle in the 2020 class. And I think the number one and number two ranked linebackers in the country. I think Georgia was recruited both of them. I know Kirby talked about that earlier this week. And these are really talented inside linebackers. And Flo's been out basically the entirety of the first 2 years he's been at Oregon. And I think the hope for Oregon is that they're both able to play next to each other, you know, this year. And it's probably the last year for Sewell at Oregon. And if it's a good year for Flo, I think he has the talent and kind of the pedigree that this might be you basically only see him for 1 year because of the injuries. There's a lot of optimism about those two guys in the middle of Oregon's defense. Oregon, you know, historically has had some really good players in the secondary. They've had some good defensive linemen, but linebacker's a position. If you just go look through players that have been drafted, players that have had NFL success, it's not a very long list of Oregon players. And it feels like this could be one of the more talented inside linebacker duos Oregon has had maybe ever. And for Sewell, guy just is hits like a truck. He's a big kid. He came in at 265, I think, and he's now slimmed down to 255. I think athletically, he surprises you with how well he runs sideline to sideline because he's a big kid and he does most of his work in the box. But you get him out in coverage, and I think he got better toward the tail end of last season in that regard. I think that might be an area where Georgia tries to challenge him a little bit, is just how well does he stay with the backs and the tight ends. And obviously, the Brock Bowers matchup is going to be really intriguing. I don't think it'll be Sewell on him, but you know, at times maybe I'll be curious to see kind of how Oregon attacks that, because that to me feels like a matchup to watch for when Oregon's on defense. But you know, Sewell's a really talented player. The staff, I think you have to feel good about the idea of having someone like Lanning with his track record of having three linebackers last year be first three round picks, and the talent that they had there, and his ability to develop those guys. Well, Sewell and Flo are players that are similar from a recruiting perspective, ranking wise, maybe even better than a couple of those guys, and the ability to potentially maximize them and utilize them on this defense. Like, I think Lanning has to be pretty excited about the front seven as a whole, what he's inherited and what he stepped into, because he's got some guys to work with. And you know, there's a couple of guys that aren't going to be starters that started a lot of games last year at inside linebacker that Flo is kind of pushed to the side just because of his natural talent. It's a deep unit, and probably defensively, I think linebacker is probably the best unit on the team.
Let's kind of switch gears and talk about the matchups we're interested in seeing, and we can each take a turn. When it comes to Saturday's game, and I'll start and then I'll throw it to you, Kip. To me, it's one we talked about a few minutes ago, and it's going to be Oregon's offensive line against Georgia's defensive line and seeing if Georgia can create pressure. That's something that through fall camp, Kirby Smart was a little bit disappointed in. You know, he talked about the fact that he felt like, you know, they weren't generating enough pressure. And that allowed in the very first scrimmage Georgia had, it opened the door for some big plays from the offense. And, you know, I think that they got more of what they were wanting in the second scrimmage, but I still think there's a lot of questions really outside of Jalen Carter when it comes to this defensive line. Can guys like Zion Logue step up? Can guys like Tramiel Walthour or the freshman Michael Williams, if he is called on at defensive end, can these guys get after Oregon and specifically make Bo Nix uncomfortable? They have done a very good job during Dan Lanning's time at Georgia of really flustering Bo. I mean, his freshman year when they played Georgia was his best outing against Georgia, when 0-3 in those three meetings. So to me, that is the matchup I'm most intrigued by, seeing how Georgia's defensive line plays against, again, a very good offensive line, one that Kip said earlier could wind up being the best offensive line Georgia faces all year. Kip, is there a matchup or multiple matchups that really intrigue you when it comes to this game? I think you're muted there, Kip.
Got me again. All right, so there's a couple that kind of caught my eye. I want to see, for one, how Oregon's secondary just handles Georgia's pass catchers. And we know you mentioned Brock Bowers. You know, I'm not sure any of the linebackers, you know, whether they're really going to be able to run with him. He's, you know, he runs like a wide receiver out there. So it could be a situation where they're putting, you know, possibly the star on him. And for Dan Lanning, it's just one of those multiple positions that you're really not going to, for one, know who the starter is until they get on the field. And two, he's going to go situational. I think you look at the jack position, you look at the star position, just like Kirby Smart, it's going to be dictated on matchups. And what's really interesting to me is there could be three guys from the state of Georgia that end up starting for Oregon. I think you look at Jamal Hill from like 20 minutes south of me at Morrow High School. He's a guy that could be tasked with going up against Brock Bowers. And then you look at the secondary. I mean, Brian Addison's a guy that was highly recruited and very talented at safety. But then their best, if not second best player on the roster, most talented, might be Christian Gonzalez. You know, he's a guy that you can use all across the defense because you know, of his size. He's a guy that's getting a lot of draft buzz. And for Georgia to have Kelee Ringo getting a lot of the pub, you know, being out of the Northwest, I think Christian Gonzalez is a guy that's got a similar frame, 6'2", 200 pounds. Danny Lanning, just like Kirby Smart, loves versatility, loves guys you can play anywhere and give multiple looks. I think he's one of those guys that's going to be, you know, asked if it's A.D. Mitchell, if it's Brock Bowers, they're going to put him all over the place. And he can make plays on the ball. It's just, you know, can he force any turnovers? That's that kind of that one aspect of his game. You want to see, you know, if he can kind of turn the corner in this year and make himself some money. I think that's going to be a big time matchup in this game. And then, on you know, just on the other side of the ball, keeping with a potential Georgia guys, there could be a Georgia running back starting for them. It's again, I think it's going to be kind of a, depending on what looks they get, but Noah Whittington is a guy out of Peach County that went to Western Kentucky, I believe, and Danny Lanning using that transfer portal to plug and play a lot of guys. I want to see, you know, how Georgia's run defense can handle, you know, just a lot of new faces. There's a lot of guys, we talk about guys that went to the NFL, and it's interesting. You talk about Cristobal and what they did on the offensive line with rotating. That's what Georgia does in their defense. They rotate a lot of guys in and out. So while we have a lot of guys that maybe not be known as starters, you know, nationally, they played a lot of football last year for this defense. So I'm interested to see, you know, how Georgia is able to get some stops on defense and force Dan Lanning to make some tougher decisions. That's kind of where Bo Nix kind of gets in trouble is when he's forced to make decisions in the tighter windows. He tends to make some questionable decisions. And if Georgia stops that running game and kind of forces Bo to take some shots, I think there could be, again, some turnovers in this game. And so that's really one of those interesting aspects. And I forgot to mention, talking about just the fact that there could be multiple guys from Georgia starting, and just looking at the jack position, Braden Swenson from Chapel Hill High School in Douglasville, he's another guy that, you know, is in the mix there. And I think, like, when they're looking for that, maybe a pure pass rusher look, or they want someone to pin their ears back, he could be that guy that they try to see if they can get some pressure on Stetson Bennett, a guy that kind of reminds me a little bit of Davin Bellamy, a guy that, you know, made a lot of plays for Georgia a couple of years ago. I think he's one of those up-and-coming guys that I think Dan Lanning is going to love, just overall what he brings to the table as far as size and length and his ability to kind of set the edge a little bit. If he can kind of grow in that area, I think he can be a guy that can get a lot of snaps for Oregon this year. So that's kind of something that's interesting to me, just the fact that you got three Peach State guys that could play prominent roles in this game on Saturday.
Eric, what matchup or matchups really catch your eye going into Saturday?
Well, Kip named like three or four of them that I was looking at too, and did a really good job assessing some of the talent. You know, I think Gonzalez is really intriguing, by the way, as well. I'll kind of second that one. That was one where came over from Colorado. It's not a very storied program. A team Oregon beat up pretty good last year. But interestingly, his position coach at Colorado is also Oregon's cornerbacks coach, Demetrius Martin. And it kind of came over, and within a couple of days, it was like, no, he's the real deal. And in fact, he's maybe pound for pound the best player on this defense, was something I was told early in camp. This is a defense that includes Noah Sewell, includes Justin Flo, includes Brennan Dorlis, which is a name I want to get to in a moment here, who's probably Oregon's best defensive lineman. I think Gonzalez could be kind of an X factor in terms of how they decide to use him. I do think, I'm just really curious what the Brock Bowers solution is, if there is one, or even kind of what the game plan is there. We talked to Coach Lanning about it, and you know, obviously he's very guarded in what he says. And we talked to Bennett Williams, who Kip talked about how maybe rotating at that star position. He and Jamal Hill are the two players rotating there. I think Bennett more than likely would draw a matchup with Brock based upon his history and his athletic profile. I think Jamal is a little more in the box, and Bennett has had a little more experience. He played a little boundary safety last year before he broke his foot. He's another talented guy who might kind of factor in there. And Bennett talked about being confident in the team's ability to match up with Brock. I don't necessarily know if I see it. I'm really curious to see what it looks like, but Oregon has some guys athletically to try to match up with him. Now, do I think they'll have success the whole game? I'm very skeptical of that. And I think most people who've watched Brock Bowers play understand why. And of course, you know, if you're a player going to this game, what are you going to say? You're not going to say we have no chance in hell of stopping him. He's a monster. He's going to destroy us. And hopefully we can keep it within 30 points. But I do think Oregon feels like they'll have some opportunities to find some matchups. And I'll be curious to see what those look like. I mentioned Brandon Dorlus a moment ago, all conference guy last year, moved from interior. Now he's playing strictly defensive end. We might even see him stand a little bit, something I've heard. But I don't know if that is accurate. I'm going to be really curious to see, and this is probably my big matchup, is can Oregon force Georgia to throw the football? Can they win on those downs? Can they win on first down and second down? Because, you know, you mentioned earlier Oregon maybe having the best or one of the better offensive lines Georgia will face. I don't think there's any question that Georgia has the best offensive line that Oregon will face this year. Probably on its schedule. I'm trying to think of a Pac-12 team that I think is comparable, and I don't know if I could come up with one. You know, BYU has some talent there, but I think that's a reach to even say that either. So I'm going to be really curious to see how this defensive line holds up. We talked about the offensive line and how experienced it is. It's a pretty experienced Oregon defensive line. The only difference being a lot of the experienced guys are transfers. They went in the portal. It took a couple guys from Nebraska. Tony Tuioti, the new defensive line coach, was at Nebraska last couple of years. He brought over two, I think they were perceived as depth pieces when they brought them over because these weren't guys that started a ton of games at Nebraska, but the sense is they both play quite a bit. Jordan Riley, Casey Rogers. Riley is probably one of your only true nose tackles on the roster. And the other one is a guy they also brought in the transfer portal, and that's Taki Taimani, who was at Washington, who did start there for a couple of years, an all-conference honorable mention guy last year. I think it was second team in 2020. So those two guys, you know, he talked about how Kirby wants to rotate. I'm sure Oregon's going to rotate a lot, and they'll need to. I'm just very curious to see how those two guys hold up in terms of stopping some of those interior run plays. And then how much of a role can a Dorlus play? How much of a role, you know, can a Braden Swinson or a DJ Johnson play from that jack position coming off the edge? Can they be factors? Because if it becomes a game where Georgia is just running it down Oregon's throat, that's not really where you want to be if you're Oregon in terms of trying to win this football game. And Oregon, I think, is very aware of that. I mentioned, I think the front seven is probably the strength of this defense. And so, you know, if it does get to a point where they win some of those battles, it's going to be interesting to see how Oregon secondary plays too, because it's a lot of inexperienced guys there. Gonzalez is, I think, the one player you feel really, really good about putting on an island against most people most Saturdays. The other corner position is kind of a real question mark. You know, Tre'Quan Bridges and Dante Manning. Manning was a five-star recruit who Georgia was in on several cycles ago as well. Same class as Keely Ringo. Manning's had a hard time kind of breaking into that starting lineup. I don't know who starts there, but one of those two guys will, and neither have played very much. So I think there's a lot of question marks in the secondary. You feel really good about that front seven, but it's going against an offensive front that is, shoot, I mean, those five offensive linemen are pretty darn good. And then you look at the tight ends and how that's an extension, and they might go 12, 13 personnel, and Oregon's going to have a hard time matching up. So I think to me, that's one that none of you guys took some of the good ones, but you guys, what I was left with, I think that's an area I'm really curious about is D-line versus Georgia's big guys up front.
I was struck listening back to when Dan talked to you guys. I guess it would have been on Monday. Someone brought up Florida and someone else had done a good job of slowing down Bowers, and Dan Lanning was quick to point out they still lost those games. So easier said than done. Well, let's get ready to wrap this episode up. And what I'd like to do for each of us is talk about our game predictions for Saturday. If you're feeling so brave to give a score, by all means, I'll start it. I'm going to go Georgia 31-17. I don't think Georgia covers. I think the last number I saw was Georgia by 7 or by 17. I think it's going to be a 2-touchdown game. I think the fact that Oregon is pretty unpredictable. I mean, the fact that so much has changed with this roster, 11 transfers in from the portal. I think it's an opportunity for Dan Lanning and those guys to catch Georgia a little off guard. Not only that, but also the questions that Georgia has on defense, guys that, again, Kirby Smart has emphasized over and over, talented but inexperienced. That has been the three words he has used to describe specifically this defense, talented but inexperienced. I think Oregon's going to get a few plays. Then they're going to hang tight in the first half, but I think turnovers are ultimately going to cost Oregon a chance to pull an upset, and Georgia's going to win by 2 touchdowns. Kip, what are your thoughts? What's your prediction on the game?
Yeah, I think youth for both teams is going to have a big impact in this game. I think for Oregon, like you said, that secondary, I have a hard time seeing Oregon getting consistent pressure on Stetson Bennett. Just looking at him last year, you know, that wasn't really a strength of the team. And obviously, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau in the league, you know, your best overall havoc player on defense. I mean, no Sewell, outstanding talent. But again, if Georgia keys in on him, he's going to make a play or two, but it's probably going to open up some things in the other, you know, the rest of the field defensively. And just kind of looking at, you know, what team was most similar to Georgia that Oregon played last year, you bring it up. It's got to kind of be that Utah team with the offensive line. They kind of had their way with Oregon when all was said and done. And I think they ran for, 399 yards and seven touchdowns in the two wins there. That's kind of where I see maybe some issues coming up for Oregon in the second half of this game. I think that Georgia will be able to, you know, kind of impose their will and kind of utilize the depth that they have on both sides of the ball to start to pull away in this game. But I also think that Oregon's going to score more points than Georgia fans are accustomed to. I think that, you know, Oregon's running backs are probably going to, you know, at least expose some youth in Georgia's front seven, guys that haven't played a lot of football together. You're going to have some busted plays, some busted assignments there. And I think, you know, Oregon's going to be able to take advantage of that and put some points on the board. So I think Georgia goes up early. I think Oregon kind of makes it close. And in the end, I see Georgia pulling away from this one. I have them going 41-20. Is my score. I'm going with the over there. I think that Georgia covers. They put points on the board, but you know, in the end, I do think that Oregon is not going to be able to get enough pressure on Stetson Bennett and in the backfield enough to make those impact plays that can kind of change the course of a close game or a game where they're kind of behind.
Eric, what do you got? What are your thoughts for Saturday?
I kind of think it's going to be a little more high scoring than you'd expect, considering both head coaches are kind of defensive minded, which is maybe I'll be wrong. I know last year you guys opened up with a game with Clemson, which had one offensive touchdown or something like that. So maybe this will look silly, but there's, as you said, I think
no offensive touchdowns. Actually,
no. Okay. I couldn't remember.
It was a pick six for Chris Smith to win the game. So no offensive touchdowns in that game, actually. So yeah, I get where you're coming from there.
It'll be, I think more offensive touchdowns will be scored in this one. That's a pretty safe prediction. No, but I do think there are enough question marks on both defenses where I think there's enough talent on both offenses. And I think it's funny because you look at Oregon historically has been known for its offense, but of late they've had a better defense than an offense just like straight up for the last 4 or 5 years. I think this year, Oregon's defense will probably be in the totality of the season better than its offense, but I can see the defense taking some time. And I think Georgia, as we talked about, poses some real matchup problems, especially at some of Oregon's weakest places defensively, which is, I think, the big problem there, because I just think it's going to be really hard to continually get to Stetson Bennett. And that's a thing, as Kip said, last year Oregon was, I think, 6th or 7th in the Pac-12 in sacks, which is weird because you had Kayvon Thibodeau. Dan Lanning here, new scheme, a lot of stuff you guys have seen from Georgia the last couple of years where they can maybe, they maybe don't need that super elite guy. They could find ways to kind of almost simulate that pressure with simulated pressures. But I just get a sense that this game's going to have a little more scoring than expected. I think it's going to be, I'm not sure I'm going to put a score out because I'm going to save that for our show when we put our scores out. But I agree with Kip in that I kind of anticipate Georgia builds a lead at half. Oregon maybe claws back a little bit, but by the end of it, it's probably not a fourth quarter where there's too much hemming and hawing on Georgia's side. I mean, I think Oregon will probably come away feeling really good about how it played this game, feeling like, hey, we played against the best team we're going to play on our schedule, and we won some battles people didn't think we could win. We competed, you know, at about as well as we could. And that there'll be a little bit of a moral victory to it because this is a tough game. Last year they went in and they actually got the victory against Ohio State. No one expected it. And I think there's a lot of pride on this team. A lot of those guys are back, but I think this is a little bit of a different animal. And I think Oregon will be pretty competitive. And I think they'll lose by two scores. I'm going to give them I think, did you say that as well, Jordan? Did you go 14 point?
Yeah. 31-17 was my projection.
Yeah. I'll say something in that range, whether it be somewhere in that 13 to 16 point kind of margin game for Georgia. And I think Georgia ends up feeling good about itself, feeling like it was challenged a little bit by Oregon, and it sets themselves up for SEC play. And Oregon's going to feel about as good as you can coming off a loss like that, because Oregon's schedule doesn't get much easier. They play BYU 2 weeks later, and that's going to be a tough game. And if you come out and just get steamrolled, I'm not going to say the wheels fall off, but you do start getting a little bit of concern about how the rest of the year plays out.
Well, all right, everybody, we are going to wrap up this episode. Appreciate Eric for coming on. Check out what those guys are doing over there at Duck Territory. Thanks again to Kip for popping on. We're getting ready. It's almost here, the start of another season. 3:30 on Saturday. If you're not there, make sure you're tuned in there on ABC. Going to be a very interesting game, very exciting to watch. So we'll wrap it up there. Thanks, everybody, for watching, everybody, for tuning in. Make sure, if you haven't already, go to the Dogs247 YouTube channel. Subscribe. Let everybody know about the Junkyard Dogcast. Let them know where they can find it. We'll wrap it up right there. Until next time, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.